For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. School is now in session. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Mark Durkin.
Hey, teacher, leave them kids alone.
Well, good evening, and thank you for joining us here in Education Nation. I am your headmaster and host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's a privilege to join you every Saturday evening here on AM 1280 The Patriot. And of course, I am joined in studio once again by our wonderful producer of Education Nation and my co-host, Mark Durkin.
And a wonderful good evening to you, Rebecca. How have you been?
Well, I have been good, other than this cold. I'm sure people can probably hear
like
this
everybody
in my voice.
Has one, though.
I know. It hit right out of the gate. We started school the weekend or the week before Labor Day, and we have had sickness at the school from the very beginning.
It's a ping pong match.
Yeah. It's just been amazing. So I'm hoping my voice holds up here.
Yes. Lots of water.
Yes, we have a very exciting show today, though, and next week as well. In June of 2018, the landmark Supreme Court case, Janus versus AFSCME, which stands for the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, which is really our public sector unions across America, overturned 40 years of precedent, having ruled that unions can no longer charge non-union employees fair share, because they violate First Amendment rights of public employees.
That's right, Rebecca. Prior to the ruling, most government employees, including teachers, they paid between $500 to $1,000 in fair share fees to a government union in order to keep their jobs, and sometimes even more. And in the Janus case, the Supreme Court majority stated that the right to speak, the right to associate or not to associate, which protects citizens against being forced to fund someone else's political speech, are the bedrock of our freedom and constitutional republic.
That's right. And the lead plaintiff in the case, Mark Janus, has since joined the Liberty Justice Center and travels around the country to raise awareness of government workers' rights and the special union and political interests that threaten to deny them. He joins us by telephone tonight from Illinois to discuss, his lifelong journey as a public servant and the specifics surrounding his landmark Supreme Court case. Mark, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Education Nation.
Oh, well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, wonderful. And I had the privilege of being able to meet you, I think, a year or two ago, right after the case had been won, and you visited the state with Rebecca Friedrich, who also brought the same case, but it ended up in a hung jury through the Supreme Court. So we were glad that you were able to come and share more about this whole case. So we're excited to have you on the show tonight.
Yeah, it sounds like, we're going to have a very interesting discussion this evening.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Well, before we discuss the specifics concerning your Supreme Court case and your subsequent victory, can we discuss your journey that led you into a lifetime of public service? In your life, when did you learn about public service, and how exactly did your life experiences shape your view that of what effective public service should look like?
Well, I would have to say I began, obviously, through attending church. Of course, my parents, my dad especially, he served in the military as a young man. And then I got involved in the Boy Scouts and started off as a Cub Scout and went all the way up to Eagle Scout and obtained that rank. And then also my church, instilling in me that, you know, that you have to have faith. You have to be with your fellow man and improve conditions all across your community.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's with, you know, between those three, legs of the stool, if you will, that's where I got my public service bug, if you will.
Right. And you know, the wonderful thing about that, Mark, is that that is kind of the American way of the past, right? You're, I would say, probably upwards of 50 years old, as am I. And that was the norm back in the day that we were raised, is that most everyone attended church. Most of the boys were involved in Boy Scouts, and I know my brother went all the way through Eagle Scouts as well.
Right.
And
oh,
that public, yeah, and that public, my dad was one of the leaders, and it was just, it was a common way to teach service and a love of country and a love of fellow man.
God, family, and country.
God, I mean, family,
the,
country.
The,
there you go.
The three-legged stool.
Yes, yes, yes.
And, well, that's and then also, you know, you really develop some very strong bonds and friendships, too.
Yes.
And which also then kind of helped enhance the community, mm-hmm. Where you worked together and you knew people. And if someone, you know, got into trouble in some manner, you know, personally or financially, you know, there were people there to help out.
Yes, yes.
That's whatever exactly. way they could.
Yep, that's mm-hmm. exactly right. Well, in the 1980s, you worked a government job and you weren't required to pay money to a union. Can you share with our listeners what that work experience was like?
Well, quite frankly, it was a lot of fun. it was interesting, number one, I took home more money.
Right, so you weren't paying the union
because
fee.
I didn't have to pay, and the like. And there didn't seem to be all these work rules and all this other you know, conditions of employment. So it just seemed to be a lot easier and the ability to do your job and do it well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and the thing too, Mark, is your work career has led you to work for a private company as well, too. And you later returned to the public sector in 2007. You know, at that time, what type of work were you doing for the state government in Illinois?
Well, when I joined the state in 2007, I became what's known as a child support specialist, which was a position that helped parties that had child support cases or court orders. I mean, you have two parties that, for whatever reason, don't agree. Children were involved, and therefore, you know, one party had to pay the other support and
right.
And so my job was simply to make sure that the parties got what they deserved within the realm of the court order. Mm-hmm. And some people might call it a kind of an accounting-type function, but the idea was to keep it fair to both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in working as a child support specialist, you did soon discover that the state government granted a politically powerful union the authority to deduct money from your paycheck. You know, tell us what the state government in Illinois was doing at that time, and what type of political power did this government union hold over individual workers?
Well, the main power that they held is that if you wanted to work for state government, like in my case, Illinois, you had to pay the union, whether
yes.
you wanted to or not. In Illinois, it was a state law, and I'm sure in other states it's the same way. And that's what I got frustrated with, because just in order to work in public service and do my job, I had to pay a fee to this union twice a month for, you know, in perpetuity, if you will, if I wanted to keep my job. And if I didn't pay, you know, I couldn't hold that job. And I just felt that was totally wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm kind of curious. You mentioned that back in the 80s you worked for a government job that where you didn't have to pay money into a union. Are public sector unions, were they a newer phenomenon then since the 1980s, or have they always been around?
Well, they have been around for, you know, numerous years, but they have expanded their scope. They've expanded the number of positions of which they collectively bargained for.
And okay.
They've just continually grown and grown and grown.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when I first started, my direct supervisor was not part of the union. She was considered middle management.
Okay.
But at the end of my tenure, she was a union member because the union had been able to submit and get approved her position as a manager to be a part of the union and covered under the union contract.
Wow. Mm. Okay. So that it just keeps growing and expanding and over the course of time.
And I think, too, if I read correctly, I believe that at this time that you were serving as the child support specialist in 2007, I mean, didn't 90% of government workers in Illinois, weren't they essentially under the obligation of having to pay these union dues?
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. Wow.
Right.
90%.
I mean, even if you were a union member, obviously you paid your dues.
Right.
But if you were, like myself, a non-union member,
yes.
You still had to pay this fee, which was approximately 80% of the full union due structure.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the argument was, well, you're getting the benefits of our contract negotiations, our
right.
exclusive representation,
mm-hmm.
And the like, even though, number one, I never voted for that exclusive
representation. Right.
I never asked for that exclusive representation.
Right.
And I didn't always agree with what they were bargaining for and the policies and the politics that they put
mm-hmm.
forth.
It's kind of like the big brother, we do know what's best for you.
Right.
Right, yeah, exactly. And yet, they know what's best for me, even though they never came and talked to
right.
me.
That's
right.
Right.
What they thought would be in my best interest.
Right, right.
Sought my opinion whatsoever.
Yeah.
And many others, that I worked with, coworkers, the same mm-hmm. way.
Yeah, let me.
Yeah, and that, in fact, let's go down that path a little bit. You were talking about the fact that these deductions were a blatant violation of your First Amendment rights, and you did eventually ask the U.S. Supreme Court to end this practice. And with AFSCME, the public sector unions representing so many state government workers, did you see a growing frustration among your fellow state employees as they began to recognize this and what was taking place?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there were people that would grumble and under their breath, so to speak. But when you have such a large political-based entity, which public sector unions are, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
They have the power. They have the amount of money to put into politicians' pockets for election and so on. And the thing that you also have to look at is many of these people just had no idea who to turn to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you're overwhelmingly confronted with AFSCME and ARPME in my particular case on a daily basis with bulletin boards, with notices, people wearing T-shirts, lanyards that they would give out to hold your credentials that you had to wear daily for security purposes, flyers that were left on your desk. I mean, it was basically 24/7.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, imagine if that was in the reverse. The outcry that would happen from the unions if somebody decided to come along and put flyers on the desks that were anti-union or pro, because most of the unions we know factually support Democratic candidates. If you had put flyers out on people's desks to vote Republican at some point, an anti-union, what an outcry that would be.
Well, I mean, number one, you cannot, in the state of Illinois, you cannot politic, within a government building and the like.
And yet,
which is good.
Yet it is good, except yet they're politicking by virtue of being pro-union, really.
Well, and there were meetings that they would hold during lunch periods under the guise of, letting us know, what was going on, like with contract negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
And although I would not directly sit in on those meetings, I would overhear what was being said.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, a majority of that was not talking about the contract negotiation. It was talking about, the upcoming election and who they should vote for and how this politician is evil and this other guy is good.
Oh, my gosh.
And the like. And so I'm thinking, okay, under the equal, provisions
mm-hmm.
that many radio stations and other TV stations have to give equal time, why are we not getting the equal time for the other points of view that the union was espousing?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I was always taught in college and high school and the like that, there's always two sides to a story.
Right.
But if you only hear the one side, how are you going to make an informed, educated decision?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, let me ask you this, Mark, too, on that. You know, we talk about all of the bargaining practices that were going on, and then, you know, you just have the occasional comments during an election season about which, you know, politician was good. I mean, was there a process that you went through in terms of really maybe doing some research to see, okay, where exactly are my funds going? What other organizations are being supported by these union dues? I mean, how long of a process was that for you that really kind of helped bring you to the place of maybe going to the Supreme Court?
Well, it took all of about 10 minutes from the standpoint. And I mean, that's a great question, because trying to find out where my money went was almost impossible.
Yes.
And there's very, very little transparency.
Yeah.
And when you do try to find that information out, it's so nebulous. For example, let me point out, you have a line item called advertising,
mm-hmm.
and a dollar amount, and that was in the millions. The one thing that I determined was, well, what is advertising?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the T-shirts that they give out to everybody to let everybody know that you're in favor of the union? Is that the posters and signs they put up in, you know, the bulletin boards and all around the state buildings? Or is it the advertising for a candidate that they support, such as a yard sign
mm-hmm.
they go put out and put in somebody's yard, or a flyer that they have printed up and they have their union members going door to door supporting a particular candidate? That could all be considered advertising.
Yeah.
However, they told me that, oh, well, don't worry, your money is not going for political purposes.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
But there was no way to find out if it was or wasn't.
Just take our word for it.
Yeah, just trust us. Yeah.
Right. Because they've proven to be so trustworthy.
Absolutely.
Oh. What led you to the place where you decided to go ahead and go forward with this case?
I think it was the fact that, as a lot of people may or may not know, Illinois, its political and its budget situation is verging on bankruptcy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Bonds in the state are just slightly above junk status.
Hmm.
We have over, very close to, depending on who you talk to, $200 billion with a B.
Wow.
In pension debt.
Oh.
Wow.
We have on an annual basis, and again, it varies, anywhere from $5 to $7 billion a year in unpaid bills to these all across the state, whether that businesses that provide goods and services, social services, whatever, and so on and so forth. And yet, the union was in contract negotiations with the state, and the union was asking for $3 billion with a B, increased wages and benefits.
Wow, unbelievable!
So asking for
they can't make daily, obligations, and here was the union asking for more money to that effect. Now, what's even more egregious, in my opinion, was even as a non-member, they wanted me to go out, and if they went on strike, because they were talking about it. They wanted me to go out on strike with them and not cross the picket line and not come to work. So even as a non-member, they expected me to do that. And I thought, enough is enough.
Right, right.
You know, the thing we have to remember is that union members are also taxpayers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people forget that your union people and your state workers do pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're increasing the tax burden, you know, by asking for all these extras,
mm-hmm.
if you will, how is that going to affect the individual worker in having to pay more taxes, and are they really coming out ahead?
Right. It's kind of going in one pocket and out the other.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking with Mark Janis today on our Education Nation here, AM 1280 The Patriot. And we are very excited to be speaking with him. Mark Janis is the one who won the Supreme Court case that allowed public sector unions people to release themselves from the public sector unions and from their fair share tax. So can you tell us a little bit more now about your case specifically, Mark, as we kind of turn our attention to the case itself?
And, well, the case itself freed over 5 million public sector workers from having to pay these agency fees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in other words, they gave the individual worker the right to choose and to make their own decision.
Mm-hmm.
And from that standpoint, it's now putting the decision power back into the hands of the individual worker and not the union. And that's the primary case. Now, a lot of people have said, you know, that this is an anti-union decision, and I read about that literally daily.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolutely nothing in the decision that is anti-union.
Mm-hmm.
All it says is give the worker the right to make their own decision. That's
mm-hmm.
all it says.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very oversimplified. And it provides for the worker to affirmatively consent as to whether they want to join or not join.
Mm-hmm.
And it is up to the individual. If the union feels, or the worker feels that the union is doing a good job and is representing their interests and stands for what they believe in, then God bless them.
Mm-hmm.
Join,
mm-hmm.
You know, pay the dues and support that entity.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you disagree and you don't feel that the union is in your best interest, then why do you have to be forced to pay something? And this decision, you know, said, look, you don't have to pay now to work in a government
mm-hmm.
job. That's all it did.
Say, one of the questions that is going through my mind right now, Mark, is I know with the teachers, their health care was always threatened. If you don't join the union, you're not going to have your health care coverage. How has that been managed in other sectors of government workers?
Well, number one, it's a bogus argument because, let's face it, the entity that you work for, let's say the Board of Education,
mm-hmm.
they contract and they provide the health insurance contract, you know, with mm-hmm. whatever entity, Blue Cross or whoever is in your local area. And so therefore, whether or not you're a member of the union or not, the union doesn't have any say.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think most people don't know that.
Exactly. And that's one of the big problems. And that's one of the false arguments that the union makes that says, oh, if you don't join the union, you're going to lose your pension.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why are you going to lose your pension when, you know, it's the Board of Education that provides that pension in conjunction with the state or whatever entity it might be?
Mm-hmm.
Health insurance. Again, it's the Board of Education that provides, you know, that benefit. Yes, it may be negotiated as part of the contract, but that's handled by, you know, that particular Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go on and on, but the idea of the fact that, you know, you're not going to have the liability coverage, for example, that teachers, that the union always touts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a very interesting fact. Most boards of education carry a liability insurance for their employees.
Mm.
And if you get into trouble as a teacher, you then have that insurance to back you up. That's provided by the Board of Education. Now, the union insurance actually does not kick in at all until after the Board of Education insurance coverage
wow.
is exhausted.
Wow.
And in many cases, sometimes people have filed claims that, you know, for that union insurance, and they've been denied because the coverage is so, you know, narrow
and specific.
Mm-hmm. And specific. Plus, if you want that extra coverage, it's kind of like an umbrella policy that many people have, you know, to go above and beyond your home fire, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
What a lot of people don't realize, there are other entities out there that provide twice the coverage that the union provides at half the cost.
Oh, my goodness. Mm.
And all you have to do is go out and do a little bit of investigation, such as teacher insurance on the Internet or whatever, and there are a number of different entities that do that. And you find that coverage is better and less cost.
Wow. Yep. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So this is another area where the unions are trying to coerce, and some people may find that to be a very strong word, but that's exactly what it is,
mm-hmm.
to keep the money flowing, because most unions treat their members or the people that they cover as an ATM machine. That's all
mm-hmm.
they're
in. Yeah.
They want to keep the money flowing, keep their monopoly, and you know, continue on their merry way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Let me ask you this, Mark. You know, another big complaint I think that's come from the unions for those that are non-members is, well, they're still going to then be on the receiving end in terms of benefit of whatever comes out of the collective bargaining, even though they won't be paying any of these dues. Now, you mentioned earlier that that doesn't mean necessarily that a non-member is in agreement, rather, with what's being bargained in the first place. But I'm just thinking, you know, from a teacher's perspective, you know, ultimately with teachers opting out, it's all about wanting to do what's best for the students, getting back to what maybe the union was designed for, as opposed to pushing a lot of this political persuasion. Is that kind of the same avenue with other government sector type opportunities, just getting back to what really should count?
Yeah, I think kind of what you're, I think what the direction you're heading, if I may be so bold to say, is I think you're looking at that free rider or freeloader
yes.
comment. And here's my response to that.
Yes.
How can you be a freeloader, a free rider, when you don't have a choice?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, give me the opportunity to negotiate a contract on my own, you know, with my employer.
Yes.
Don't force me to accept whatever you negotiate. And the fact that you are negotiating are the exclusive mandated representative, then what choice do I have?
Mm-hmm.
Don't allow me by law in many states and entities across the country to go out and negotiate for myself. Now, in some cases that I've talked to individuals that have opted out of the union, and they have gone to the individual school board or whatever entity it might be, they've actually been able to negotiate a better contract or a better working conditions and better salary, et cetera.
Interesting.
Do they tend to do it together with others that are also opting out, or is it on an individual basis, or how does that usually
varies,
work?
It varies across the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, and I can't speak that it's a one-size-fits-all. That is not the case. But the fact that the unions are forcing you to accept that negotiation that they do, and they're forcing you to accept that collective bargaining, then doesn't give you the ability to go out and do it on your own. So how can I be a freeloader, free rider?
Yeah.
when you don't have an alternative,
right?
That's the bottom line.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, we are so short on time. I think we're going to save our last question for our next show because we're very thankful that you get to come back and join us again next week when we're going to talk a little bit more about what the government reaction has been to this Supreme Court response and what also the other unions' responses have been as well. And so we're going to enjoy having you back with us again next Saturday, Mark. And I want to thank you again, Mark Durkin. It's a little confusing
it's my pleasure.
Here.
Absolutely.
Mark Janis and Mark Durkin. Thank you for putting together this show. And thank you for joining us tonight, Mark Janis. And we look forward to having you with us again next week.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Look forward to it.
All right. Thank you. And thank you to our listeners as well. And if you want to listen to this podcast or any other podcast, you can go to ednationmn.org, ednationmn.org, or you can find us on Facebook at Education Nation Radio. And we hope you'll join us again next week when we have Mark Janis back again.
6 o'clock.
All right. 6 p.m. AM 1280, The Patriot, Education Nation.